accession number 30,004, Mr. Lenselic, Wheel 5. Now, when you got to your unit, can we talk a bit about what the conditions of service were like at that unit before we go on to what your actual duties were? So what was your living accommodation? Was it the same sort of home?
No, the living accommodation at Tidworth was, Aliwell Barracks was fairly modern by anything I'd had before. It was brick built on two floors. We were quite used to the spiders. The ablutions, showers and everything were better quality. So the accommodation was very good. There was one, two, three, four, probably eight to a room instead of mass numbers, and a bunk, as they called it, for the NCO.
So pretty comfortable.
It was comfortable, yes, yes.
And what about the food?
The food, I never really had a problem with food in the army. I know it has
you
a reputation, but yeah, it's that was fine as well there.
Now, what was your daily routine like when you first got there?
Oh, well, the 61st Field had fairly recently come back from Korea, where they served on the Imjim thing, and they were virtually doing nothing. For months and months on end, I was given this vehicle, and all I did was polish the vehicle, go for a naffy break, go back and polish the vehicle, go for a naffy break. It was very, very just ordinary routine. It was total difference to training, because we didn't parade with shiny brass ears. We just paraded in denim. No marching, no nothing. I thought it was paradise compared with the training camp, but that will always be, because training camps are hard.
And what was your vehicle?
It was a Champ.
What is it?
A Champ was built by Austin. It was a sort of a posh Jeep, really. It had a Rolls-Royce engine, I remember, massively powerful engine, the four-wheel drive. What was a good trick with that was that you could throw the whole gearbox into reverse by pulling a lever. And I can remember on Salisbury Plain, see how fast you could go backwards. And I think I got it up to about 60 miles an hour in reverse, on what, not on the main road, but on the plains. And the legend has it that they were really designed for the Italian army.
Were they reliable?
They were very, very reliable. And they were also for water. I'll tell you about the water thing. They could go underwater, and I did do beach landings with them at Portsmouth. We went down there one time and did beach landings. Okay. Well, yeah, they were reliable. Their one great fault, why we don't see them anymore, like Land Rover. We had Land Rovers as well, but mine was a Champ. Was because they were too heavy and they could get seriously bogged down. The weight of the vehicle was too much.
How many people could they carry? I mean,
just the four.
Two in the back.
Two in the back, like the American Jeep, but with a lot more body.
Now, you were just polishing, basically.
Now and again, another job I had with them, very few jobs for me, was going and getting the wages with the officer, with the captain. I used to go down to the bank in Tidworth, and that was one simple little run, or anywhere else he wanted to go. But he didn't abuse it, because he had quite a nice car himself, so he didn't use it all the time, and so most of the time it never went anywhere. And I used to climb on top of, it used to be in the car park, and I'd climb on top of 3-ton lorries, which had canvas hoop tops, and sleep up there out of sight, out of mind, in the sunshine. So that was another nice thing about it.
How did you get on with the lads? You said they were a bit jealous.
One or two who really thought they were going to get there. With the rest, I think I was reasonably popular, as much as anybody. I had this knack of making them laugh even, which was good. No, I didn't have a problem there. I had plenty of friends.
You sort of
generally... And barrackroom lawyer. I was a comedian and barrackroom lawyer, both.
Tell us about the comedian first.
Well, that's
your way of getting on.
I think it always has been. It's if you can't fight, make them laugh. And I couldn't fight, so I tried to make them laugh and be popular that way. It works. It still works for me in what I do today.
Now, the barrack room lawyer, I mean, I know what it means. Can you explain to them what it meant?
Barrack room lawyer was really a term of abuse from NCOs. If you said, that's not right, or I will write to my MP and complain about this, I deserve leave, and other soldiers would come to you and say, can they do this? And then I'd sort of say, no, they can't do that. You can complain and you should see your commanding officer and tell them that this sergeant is a menace, you know, that type of thing. And I don't know why, but I fell into that job.
And did you actually read the rules and regulations?
No.
Or did you just sort of go by what you
felt? I had them word of mouth from my brothers, who, as I say, had been previous national servicemen, and they gave me quite a bit of information there, what you could and could not do. And the ultimate was to write to your MP or any MP, and that was always the threat.
But you didn't do it?
No, no. The famous one there, actually, you mentioned the name to NCOs, was Bessie Braddock, Labour MP from up north, who was the soldiers' champion at the time. Big lady. But apparently she was. But I never wrote to Bessie, no.
And what about getting on the NCOs? Because you've set about to be, in your own words, well, to paraphrase, a bit of a skiver, or a lot of a skiver.
A real skiver, a genuine skiver.
How did you get on with NCOs then? Because that must have been quite an interesting.
Although I had declared war on the army, I never did anything that was vicious or really bad. I would just bend the rules. I never got into serious trouble, so I think they thought I might be a bit of a scamp, really. I mean, they'd shout and then go away laughing or something, you know. So, no, I didn't really have... I wasn't victimised or anything like that. No.
And what about the officers, including your officer, you know, the troopman?
The troop commander, the captain, was a gentleman, so I had no problem there. It was the lieutenants who were... I thought some of them were a bit not up to the mark. But they were national servicemen. Well, they were easily fooled, and whereas the professional soldier was not. You never fooled the RSM, for example. He's been in there too long, he knew all the tricks. We would have an inspection, and they would give the young officers the job of inspecting the vehicles. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. And you laid your tools out in front of the vehicle, in a regimental way, of course. And if you were spanners short, it was noted and things, and we used to sort of pass spanners between. I think there was one particular spanner that appeared in front of every vehicle as it walked along. A junior officer would miss all this, but you could do it. If it was a senior officer, they knew all the tricks. There was a lot of tricks.
So how much preparation would there be for a vehicle and tool inspection?
No, not a great deal. They were supposed to check that you had every tool, but the tools go missing and it wasn't there. And the other thing you used to have to do was change the oil, particularly in a Champ for some reason, every 1,000 miles. Well, in Tidworth, there was no vehicle doing 1,000 miles, but you still had to change it within weeks. There was this pattern, either so many weeks or 1,000 miles, change the oil. In the end, I did not change the oil. I had a jerry can of oil and I sold it to the local builders in Tidworth, who were very grateful for clean oil. First of all, I drained my sump and it was so pure that it didn't matter, so I sold them that. In the end, I didn't bother, I just sold them the oil. They can't touch me now.
So you just spent the day doing nothing, really?
Really doing nothing for quite a long period of time. And then I think about that was just the daily routine.
What about in the evening? What sort of recreation?
Evening was naffy.
What did it offer you as a young man?
The naffy was, well, cheap food, plenty of donuts, plenty of tea, big mugs of tea that we no longer had bromide in our tea in the regiment. That was only in training. Pub, which we seemed to be able to afford, which is a bit strange.
The camp pub, or do you mean you went outside?
No, the pub was outside the camp, but you could have drinks, of course, in the naffy. There's the naffy club. The best one in Tidworth was the Salvation Army Club, which was really scruffy and beaten up furniture, but they were less officious, and I still have a very, very high regard for the Salvation Army.
What about when you went, would you go to pubs in Tidworth?
Yes. Tidworth still. Yeah, we sometimes into Salisbury where there was a naffy club. Now, a naffy club is a posh naffy where they've got everything. Snooker, swimming pools, that type of thing. But that was in Salisbury. That was a few miles away, and you had to take a bus to it. So that slowed you down a bit. Depended how much money you had.
Was there any trouble in the Tidworth pubs, or what was it like going out there?
Because it was totally military. I didn't see any of the... you heard about troops fighting other regiments. I never saw it, and I never took part in it, so I don't know what that was about, you know.
Were you made welcome in the pub?
Well, the pub only had military customers, virtually. Tidworth is an entirely military town. The civilians would not have... They were not important to the publican. It was just the soldiers. It would be full of soldiers, and all in uniform as well.
And no trouble that you saw.
And no trouble that I ever saw.
Did you drink much at the time? Or?
No, I'm still a bad drinker today. I didn't, no. It was
social drinking.
It was, to keep up with the lads. I did that as a young man, and I did it in the army. It didn't change. I did not swallow pints and pints of beer. I just didn't do it, you know. But to keep up with the lads, yeah, let's go to the pub. You know, it was that sort of.
What happened next then? Do you get? I know you go to Porton Down from the, but do you? Is there anything before? Do you have any exercises?
Yeah, I was. We did. We started. I can't remember exactly when, because it went all through the summer. I used to go home every weekend. It was nothing. And then suddenly they started to retrain us with the guns. So we got the guns out. We would go to the artillery ranges, and we'd have all night schemes. Map reading exercise, all the military things that we hadn't done. I went on. By this time, a friend of mine who I joined the army with, Roy Jemmett, was promoted to Lance Bombardier, and I was in his platoon. And there was an occasion on Salisbury Plain. We put we're supposed to take a pillowcase over a head and drive for a blind map reading exercise, which of course I cheated at. By looking under the pillowcase. And when we got to the first position, we were given grid references, then we were told to go to another grid reference, and at that grid reference, I think it's called, what's it called today? It's sort of orienteering, isn't it? It really was orienteering, but it wasn't a word we used. And on one occasion when we did this, Roy was ill, or the one that was going to lead this little troop of men was ill, and I was offered it as senior soldier to lead them. And, of course, I led them straight to the bus stop and back to camp, which is not supposed to do. And I was wakened somewhere around about midnight by a sergeant who'd been waiting on a hilltop near Stonehenge somewhere. And he wasn't a happy man. So, again, that was part of my attitude to the army. And I think I was then being tested to get a stripe as well, and I didn't care, so it didn't matter.
So there's a map reading exercise. What other types of exercise were you on?
We did schemes with... We'd go out and not always fire the guns, but prepare gun pits... Wasn't my job. I was a signaller operator to the commanding officer. I had the best job. And but they would camouflage up, stay the night, and they would sort of live rough. Whereas the troop commander would say, we'll go to the pub now and leave them out there all night. We did a place called, in Devon, Okehampton. I can remember where it was. Okehampton was one. And I wasn't quite so lucky there. I was told to get out of a vehicle with a telephone and a wire, and they disappeared into the night and left me there all night. And I tried ringing the phone and saying, I haven't got anything to eat. But to cut a long story, in the morning, I walked along the cable, and it was only about 20 feet long. They'd done a nasty trick on me. No wonder the phone didn't ring. I don't know why I was entitled to that.
Anything else? You mentioned this combat, this landing. Was that during that phase?
That was right? Towards the end of it. Yes. Yeah. Within months, it all started to be. We started to play soldiers properly, and that was one of the schemes. We also went.
The landings
were done at South Sea, in Portsmouth. Combination. We were to land in landing craft, drive off the landing ramp into what looked like to me too far from the, and I was the first vehicle off in my Champ, and drive up the beach, and then in the meantime guns as well were going off, and there was a grandstand of foreign generals and God knows what, and our blank shells set fire to the gorse behind them, which pleased me. And then, oh, I can remember, because by the time I'd driven up, I was no longer part of it, and we had to have casualties lying on the beach there who were going to be taken away by a helicopter. This was great. So I laid down with some of the others, and the medics came round, and in theory, you were going to be lifted by a helicopter and taken back to barracks, job done. I think I had a big smile on my face, and he sort of poked me with his foot and said, "This one's dead," and they left me. So I never did get me flight in a helicopter. That was actually quite a good exercise, but you did get soaking wet. You had no protective clothing. I had to stand on the seat and pull out a hand throttle in low gear because it had 10 gears altogether, 5 forward, 5 reverse. Very powerful vehicle, but it still only moved very slowly. So we had that one, but we were firing blanks, obviously, too near South Sea. And I think after that we went to Otterburn to seriously fire guns. And that was even better. It was very, very cold. Can't tell you the month, so it was obviously winter. It was very, very cold. And on the second night, I didn't really do much at all. On the second night, we were allowed to go to a dance in Morpeth. The lorry was going to take us all to Morpeth, and that's when I got my first war wound. I sprained my ankle running for the lorry to go to a dance. Still went to the dance with a sprained ankle. Came back and then was excused duty, was in a Nissan hut playing with the radio and being a nuisance, but I didn't really take part in it after that. And when we flew back, in the meantime, the captain had been had injured his arm and was in a sling. Don't know how he did that. The other radio operator, there was me with a broken foot, and there was the other radio operator. And somebody had to drive back from Otterburn, which is quite a long way, back to Tidworth. And I had to drive back with a broken ankle, with it plastered up.
It was actually broken?
I'd broken a small bone in my ankle, and it was plastered up. And the captain had his arm in a sling, so I was the lesser of two evils. The signaller in the back said, "I can drive, sir," and he said, "No, thank you, Mullins, I'll give you a name." Bombardier Mullins. And he'd rather I drove him with a broken ankle as a proper driver than an army trained driver. Doesn't say much for them, does it? That's how we spent our time. Then it became quite repetitious. It was never too hard. We didn't do infantry training particularly. I can remember, though, doing bayonet practice up a hill and screaming.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I don't know whose idea that was, but we sort of had to form up and start screaming and run up a hill with bayonets for some reason. It was just on one occasion. I think NCOs come up with ideas just to keep us busy. You know, it's like boiling the guns or... It was a total waste of time, really. We were just marking time. There was no doubt about that.
Now, what happened next then? So you got this...
Well, that was repeated and repeated until the time I went to Porton Down. So I had a whole year of it, 18 months of it.
So any other stories, you know, just things that happened or things that you did that caused trouble? Yeah. I think that's where you're going, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, as I say, one thing I will point out is that on guard duty, when I did do guard duty, and I didn't do them weekends because I paid somebody else to do them, but when they come up in the week, I did do them. And I'm proud to say I didn't do one guard duty properly. I'd never walked round for 2 hours. And one of the best ones, and the devilment of it, was to go back to the barracks and sleep while you went around in twos while the other young sort of nignogs, we called them, didn't we? They were new soldiers. And even if he'd only been in a week longer, he was still nothing, you know. I didn't do one guard there properly. Not at all. I'd walk around, and I had another little trick. I could get into the cookhouse, and I quite a few times making myself a nice bacon sandwich in the middle of the night in the cookhouse. I knew a way in.
Where was it?
It was up through a skylight. It was it wasn't too difficult. If you wheeled the bins along a bit, you could slide in through there. But I'm supposed to be on guard. And on guard, we wore plimsolls, like trainers, thin trainers. And we carried a pickaxe handle. We didn't have weapons, because the IRA were not doing much there. And that was quite useful for opening the window. So sort of burglar tools were supplied.
And you wouldn't sort of rob, it sounds like you just made yourself a sarnie, right?
Oh, I made a sarnie. No, I wouldn't. As I say, you would have been... I was always sort of, food was quite important, that you could never get enough, but it was mainly devilment. It was really, I wasn't particularly hungry. The only thing I didn't like in the guard room was cocoa. I never, still don't like cocoa, but they used to insist on buckets and buckets of cocoa. So I'd make my own tea and cook myself a sandwich in there.
Now, what about your friend Lance, who we're going to interview actually, but
yeah.
When did you become friends with him?
At Tidworth, it's George Lancelot Hughes. Now, he was...
Lance,
yeah. Well, he calls himself Lance, so that was it. And I'd only say Lance a lot to annoy him. It's his second name, actually, so he preferred Lance to George. So.
Now, where did you meet him, and why did you get on so well with him? Because he was here the other week when we were here.
Yeah.
Why did you get on with him so well?
He made me laugh. He was very, very funny, and I got a lot of humour from him. He was a very smart soldier, as opposed to me. He always got stick men on guard. No, Lance was great fun. He was great fun to be with. He was probably in the same room, and there's only eight of you, and so he's coming up the pub, and Lance will say, I'll come with you, you know. And you form friendships that way in the army. The man in the next hut, you didn't know.
Had you been in longer than you?
No. He's an ignog.
Oh, so he was.
Yeah. Get some service in, yeah. Get your knees brown and things like that.
But he was generally more serious.
Yeah,
about it,
and you would really go at people like that, you know. I was in, you know. We used to have all sorts of expressions about nignogs, you know. I was in uniform when you were in liquid form and stuff like that.
From the sound of it, there was no bullying, though. I mean, a bit of bullshit.
There's one thing I would like to say, as far as the eight in my hut were concerned, not hut, it was a barrack room then, I would dash in, go and leave, and I could leave money on my bed by mistake, and it would be there when I came back on Monday. I think that says a lot for the relationship there. You could actually do it.
There was no stealing at all?
Not in Tidworth. I never heard of it. I'm sure it possibly happened, but... As far as I was concerned, very often, and they would prepare you for the Monday. They would look after your kit and say, "Look, I'm on guard Monday," and they say, "Go on, go, just go on your leave."
Now, what about bullying? No bullying either, obviously.
We had I just thought of at one time. I'll get to that. At one time, we were going to form a boxing team of the regiment. This did not appeal to me too much, but in our hut one of the lads was called Arthur Horner, and Arthur, I chose to box Arthur. I knew that Arthur was a professional boxer. He had earned money boxing, so I chose to go in the ring with him, said, "Arthur, take it easy, let me get out," and he was supposed to be easing his punches, and he didn't, it still hurt. And then they declared Arthur the winner, and then I've really gone into one and said, "But he's a professional," and the army didn't know this. I knew this, and so I did him a favour, actually, because he was banned from the competition being a professional boxer, and he got the job as trainer, so he was pleased. He didn't have to do any military stuff. But Arthur, Lance used to annoy Arthur something. He used to tease him. So it's not the same as bullying, but he teased him.
Did you have any more boxing bouts?
No, that was it. You see, I thought that was a shrewd move. If I'd gone in with somebody else, I might have got hurt. I didn't want to... Heaven forbid I should get hurt. But Arthur did hurt a bit, but he said, I was pulling me punches, you know.
So no bullying.
And my pride, of course, was intact because I was the only one who fought a professional boxer. So a bit of pride there as well.
Anything else before we come when you go to Porton Down?
No, it went on like that. I mean, we had sort of Christmas shows and...
Oh, tell us about that.
Yeah, anybody could play an instrument type thing or do anything. I helped on one occasion behind the scenes and I wrote a couple of sketches, that's all. I can't remember the sketches.
What were the shows like? I mean,
Bawdy wherever possible. And the officers loved it. They all sat in the front, of course, and all the lads are at the back. And in the main, it was like... It's a bit like you see on POW films, you know, where they dress up as girls, that type of thing. It was that type of thing.
But you were behind the stage.
I was behind the stage. I was helping out. But I can't remember the gags. But you would write gags and say, "Well, can you use this?" Yeah. The only one I can remember is he comes out and the man, middle of the stage, stretches his arms out and says, "I feel like I've been on a rack all night," which of course Women's Royal Army Corps. But the lads got it straight away, and that was no problem. You know, I can't remember them all, but that type of thing. It was bawdy humour, obviously.
Will you take the mick out of the officers in the gags?
Yeah, they did actually, but very carefully. I can't really think of a gag that did that because it had to be reasonably subtle. You know, it might be sort of a reference like, "Who do you think you are, the CO?" Not particularly personal about the CO's nose, but you by inference.
Anything else? The Christmas shows? Anything else?
No, as I say, it was a pretty boring experience, really. Those months, it didn't get exciting until the end of my service, possibly the last 6 months.